Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Fired Up, the hottest sports show in Central Ohio, the show where four sports fans talk sports for the fans. Our topics for this evening are UFC 299 live from South Beach. A Philadelphia Eagle legend is hanging up his cleats. Only 1 month to go, checking in on the NBA playoff picture. Three quarters of the season down, one to go. Who's hot and who's not in the NBA? One last push before conference tournaments. Previewing this week's biggest college hoops games. With that, I give you our assistant chief for Fire Brigade, Colton Cow.
Thanks, Matt. We're here again on a Thursday night in my basement. The chief is out again, still recovering from his knee surgery. Hope to have him back in the studio next week to talk a little bit of March Madness. I know it's my favorite topic, and I know it's one of his favorites. So hoping to get him back in the studio next week. So Matt and I are going to continue to batten down the hatches here
and hold down the fort.
Like Matt mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the show, I'm going to start with a little bit of UFC talk. UFC 299 taking place this weekend on Saturday. Going to the beaches of South in Miami, Miami, Florida. Going to have, you know, an exciting card here. Got one title fight on the, you know, on the card, on the main event card. But then, you know, a handful of pretty decent fights the rest of the main card. Matt, what's your thoughts? We'll start with that title fight. What do you think there?
Yeah, starting with the bantamweight championship match, where the champion Sean O'Malley coming into this fight at 17-1-1, going against Marlon Vera, who's a little contrast there in overall records. But these guys are also pretty contrasting in their fighting styles. You got O'Malley. In his 17 wins, he's got 12 of those by knockout, one by submission, four by decision. Where Vera, he's a little different here. Of his 23 wins, he's got 8 knockouts, 10 submissions, 5 decisions. So you kind of got the knockout guy versus the submission guy.
Yep.
So, you know, in those cases, it's almost anybody's game, because if Vera can get this thing to the ground, you know, O'Malley's a little less comfortable there, and you know, he's got a chance to pull an upset. But, you know, if the champion can keep this thing up on his feet, I like his chances to win this thing running away.
Yeah. Going to be exciting. I mean, these two faced off against each other, actually. So this will be a rematch against each other. Faced back in August 2020, and Marlon Vera came out on top in that one via TKO in that match. But you know, obviously a lot has changed in the, you know, 4+ years, almost 4 years ago that they fought. You know, it is, like you said, kind of contrasting styles, and this can maybe potentially make or break both of their careers in this sense. This is, you know, Sean O'Malley's first title defense as the new champion for the bantamweight. So he's looking to, you know, kind of solidify himself there as the bantamweight champion, you know, defend his title, you know, the first time here. But, you know, Marlon Vera, you know, kind of an older guy getting towards the tail end of maybe his UFC career, looking to make one, you know, one kind of major splash or one final splash here. So, you know, we'll see if he's able to, you know, knock off the champ and kind of keep that luster there and, you know, kind of keep his, you know, towards the top and, you know, take the belt himself and see what he can do towards the tail end of his career. But yeah, I think, you know, Sean O'Malley's kind of made a meteoric rise up through the ranks of the UFC. And, you know, has taken everybody somewhat, I think, by a little bit of surprise of how quickly he's moved up here. So, you know, this is kind of again, probably another way for him to prove that he deserves to be where he is. And, you know, a good opportunity to really showcase that he deserves or, you know, belongs up there amongst the champions. But yeah, going to be an interesting fight between these two. You know, at the bantamweight, you know, 125 to 135 is the bantamweight guys. So yeah, definitely, you know, going to be exciting. Obviously a lot of talk, a lot of, you know, bad blood with these, you know, two guys having faced off against each other. It's always, it always seems to be exciting to see it the second time, because you've already seen it once, you know, so it's going to be, yeah, kind of a probably, I think early on, probably a kind of a cat and mouse game, just kind of, you know, feeling each other out. But yeah, I think there's going to be some excitement between, you know, between these two guys and, you know, in two very different styles. So, you know, exciting stuff to, you know, finish out the night. But definitely some other, you know, decent fights on the main card there. You know, kind of the co-main event is where I go to next, and that's between the, you know, in the lightweight division, you know, 145 to 155, you got Benoit St. Denis versus Dustin Poirier. St. Denis kind of, again, 13-1, you know, in his fighting career. Dustin Poirier, 29-8, and kind of a guy that we're used to seeing up there towards the top, but a guy that comes in having lost two of his last three fights. And at 38, you know, towards somewhat maybe the tail end of his career as well, you know, it's he's never held a belt as, you know, as a UFC fighter, but always a guy that's been right there, been oh so close to holding it.
Well, this may be he was fighting was for the fake title,
right?
The,
right.
What, the BMF baddest,
yeah,
or
baddest
whatever.
MF-er alive. Yeah, exactly. And you know, got punked in that or whatever. So this is probably. You know, for a guy that, this is probably a must win for him to kind of stay up there towards the top and stay relevant in that division to, you know, have a chance to possibly get another shot at fighting for the title and possibly winning the title and finally getting that elusive belt that's so far in his career has eluded him at this point. But, you know, he's going to have his hands full. If I saw correctly so far, actually, Vegas has him as the underdog going into going into this fight. Even though St. Denis is the 12th ranked fighter, so you know, much lower ranked as far as the rankings go. But Vegas still likes St. Denis to get the win in this one.
Yeah, I think it's that career 8 losses compared to the career 1 loss for St. Denis.
Right.
I just think they're giving that a little more respect.
Right.
But you know, I'd be curious to compare. All the guys they've kind of faced, you know, did those 13 wins come against guys that were kind of a shell of what Poirier has been going against?
Right. Obviously, to climb up the ranks, you don't start with the champion or whatever.
Exactly.
You do kind of fight, you know, towards the bottom or the guys that are trying to make a name for themselves as well. So, you know, I would say Poirier has definitely faced better fighters in his long career. But, you know, at the end of the day, St. Denis can only fight who he can fight.
Yeah,
I mean, it is
in front of him.
It is who it is, you know, and he's, you know, dominated everybody that he's had the opportunity to go against. So, it's going to be an exciting one to, you know, kind of get things started before we have the, you know, the title fight between those two guys. But yeah, some, you know, even before that, some exciting fights between two welterweight fights and another bantamweight fight to get the, you know, get the night started, for the main card. It's going to be some fireworks there in Miami, and you know, I think a lot of people are looking forward to the next UFC event, UFC 300. I think most people would say that it's probably the best one so far, has the best card. But I you know, I think you could arguably say that, you know, 299 may have just as competitive card, you know, from top to bottom as UFC 300. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, a lot of exciting fights on the card, and a lot of guys that are trying to. Somewhat, it seems like the theme I see in the main card is guys that are some up-and-comers versus guys that are trying
some
to
bets.
Keep their, you know, if they lose, it could, you know, spell somewhat doom for their career, if you will. So, it's you know, guys that are trying to make a name and guys that are trying to stay relevant or stay, you know, up there towards the top. So, we'll see who gets the better of, you know, the matchups in the main card. But, going to be exciting stuff, you know, taking place in Miami on Saturday night. So tune in. All right. Moving over to, you know, moving from a violent sport to maybe a little bit less violent sport.
Depends on who's playing.
Right. A little bit maybe sadder news as well. I don't know if everybody's heard or not, but it's, you know, been some big news that just happened, you know, this week. But longtime Philadelphia Eagles center, you know, Jason Kelce, you know, officially decided to hang up the cleats and call it a career after 13 seasons playing in the NFL. Matt, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, a great career for an offensive lineman. The guy started 193 games for the Eagles, won one Super Bowl, was a 6-time first-team All-Pro, 7-time Pro Bowler playing at center. He came to the Eagles as a sixth rounder. So to have that kind of longevity after earning that starting spot and just never giving up is pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. What I find even more impressive is how his football career really started when he got to the collegiate ranks.
Yeah.
He was a walk-on at Cincinnati as a running back.
Yep.
Then they transitioned him into fullback, and they're just like, you know, this isn't working, but why don't you try out center? What do you think you could do there?
Yep.
And then he just gravitated to it, held on, and became one of the greatest centers of all time. It's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was kind of something I had in my notes here. It was kind of amazing that I didn't realize or didn't know about him that, it's hard to believe, as big of a guy as he is, that he started as a running back, you know, and then transitioned to the offensive line, you know, shortly thereafter. But
at the combine, as a center, he had one of the best times ever for an offensive lineman running the 40.
Right. Makes sense. I mean, having that background of being a running back definitely, you know, I'm sure played a part in that for sure. But just kind of a, you know, it's always interesting to see some of these guys that are late round picks. Mm-hmm. Kind of their story, or you know how it comes to be, you know, and this one just really stands out in the sense that started in a completely different position, not even on the offensive line, you know, at all, and you know, transitions, and like you said, turns out to be, you know, one of the greatest centers of all time in the NFL, and you know, even in the college ranks as well.
And it really proves that some of those late round picks that don't seem so sexy can turn out to be your franchise altering best moves you could have ever made.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this is a guy that, you know, even though he was a staple on that Eagles offensive line, you know, over the past 13 years, this is a guy that had four different head coaches in his 13 years. You know, he started with Andy Reid, went to Chip Kelly, then went to Doug Peterson, and then, you know, finished his career with Nick Sirianni right now.
It's kind of funny. Andy Reid, you know, drafted him and his brother
but you know, like you mentioned, the six-time first team all pro, he's only the fifth center ever to do that, you know, up there with a lot of greats that are all in the Hall of Fame. You know, the other four that have done that are in the Hall of Fame. I guess it begs the question, is this guy a Hall of Famer at this point?
I'd say absolutely a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
A lot of people are calling him the greatest to ever do it. Yeah. I still think that kind of goes to either Kevin Mawai or Matthews.
Yeah.
Those guys, or at least from when I watched football back in the day, those guys were every week were just dominating people. Not that Kelsey didn't,
but
I felt more domination from them than him. But
still,
you know, one of an all-time great, top five at his position all time for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, he started a franchise, you know, like you mentioned, he had the 190 some starts in his career, but actually started 156 consecutive regular season games, which was a Philadelphia Eagles record, you know, and still is at the time. But, you know, there was mention, I mean, he kind of, you know, when the Eagles got knocked out of the playoffs, you know, he made some comments that, you know, this may be the end, you know, made some comments to teammates in the locker room that this may be the final time I, you know, put on my helmet or put on my jersey. You know, nothing officially was official, you know, it was just, you know, comments that he made, maybe out of
frustration
of how the season went, whatever. But, you know, ultimately, you know, decided that it was, you know, was time to hang it up. And, you know, obviously a guy that has a career after football, you know, an entertainer nonetheless between him and his brother, you know, also fellow podcasters as well, you know, their show just a tad bit more popular than ours. But, you know, he definitely has a career for him after football for sure. And, you know, I think the Eagles somewhat set up well. They you know, had a plan in place, I guess is what I'm trying to say. In 2022, they did draft, you know, they used a second round pick to draft a center. Cam Jurgens, the center out of Nebraska in the 2022 draft. And, you know, according to Kelsey, the Eagles kind of the past, I don't know, 2-3 years had asked Kelsey to start evaluating centers coming out of college. And ultimately, you know, so this was somewhat of a guy that was not only the Eagles, you know, succession plan, but a guy that was handpicked by Kelsey himself because he felt like this guy somewhat resembled the same style of play that Kelsey, you know, resembled or, you know, puts out on the field every, you know, week in and week out. So again, I think the Eagles are somewhat set up well, you know, handpicked by a legendary NFL center. You know, and you know, a guy that obviously has big shoes to fill, but right. has had a couple years under his belt to learn from one of right. the greats here and get the opportunity now to be, you know, the starting center for the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think definitely the Eagles did it right, you know, and, you know, maybe again, we don't know what happens all behind the scenes and everything like that. Maybe this was something that was already talked about or was in the works. Nobody knows, yeah. but you know, obviously what we do know now is that, you know, he has officially decided to hang it up. But
the big question is, will the tush push be as successful without
right,
him?
Right. Yeah. Obviously that was a, you know, a historic play or, you know, a play that nobody could stop. And right. he's right there at the center of it, literally the center of it. And yeah, we'll see if the Eagles continue to dominate or they continue to run that play, even with Kelsey yeah. not in the lineup. But yeah, again, probably in my mind, probably a first ballot Hall of Famer mm-hmm. when his time does come. I think, yeah, will be a first balloter.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, but yeah, as far as offensive lineman goes, yeah, one of the greats. You know, not just at the center position, but just offensive line in right. general. So yeah, we'll you know see what he decides to do. You know, after football here, but definitely a great playing career. A guy that yeah, probably nobody really gave much of a chance being a sixth round pick. But hey, yeah, like you mentioned, it's always the guys that yeah you haven't heard of or the guys that you know get drafted in those late rounds that right. turn out to be the gems of you know the NFL. So hats off to Jason Kelce and enjoy your retirement. It's going to be the second part of your life is just beginning. That's football right. was just you know just a small part of what's to come.
I
so.
Guarantee you we'll see him in a booth somewhere. Oh, yeah. Be calling games right. or doing some type Absolutely. Of color commentary.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, moving over then from the NFL, moving to the NBA. Rest of the night, we're going to be talking basketball, but we're going to start in the professional ranks with the NBA. You know, there's only about 20 plus games left in the regular season here. So we're at kind of the three-quarter mark of the NBA regular season. So we thought we'd do a couple segments with the NBA to kind of get you ready for the last, you know, part of the season and, you know, get your mind ready for NBA playoff time. So we're going to start off with kind of giving you the current picture of what the NBA playoffs kind of look like in both the Eastern and Western Conference. Yep. Then we'll kind of talk a little bit later about, you know, who we think is our NBA Finals champions, NBA final matchup, you know, MVP, all of that stuff that we typically do at kind of the quarter, half, and three-quarter mark of the season. So, like I mentioned, we'll start with the playoff picture. We'll start over in the Eastern Conference. Matt, you want to talk about the East here?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's looking like a runaway right now with mm-hmm. the Boston Celtics in that number one spot with yep. a record of 48-13.
Right.
Followed there closely by the Milwaukee Bucks. When I say closely, it's still eight games back.
Yeah.
41-22. And then things get bunched pretty up close, from there.
Yeah.
And you got the Cavs at 40-22, so 8.5 games back. And Magic at 37-26, 12 games back. Knicks at 36-26. The Heat at 35-26. Then the 76ers clear down here at 7, yeah. which is really kind of surprising for all the since they've had, Embiid, I know Embiid's been out yeah. a lot, so that's
really taking a toll.
Hurt him a ton, but dropping that seven spot. So if he gets back come playoff time, though, this isn't a real seven seed.
Right.
So, I mean, 35-27 for the 76ers. Then you got the Pacers, who were kind of the surprise at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. They've fallen back to the pack. They're in at the eight spot right now.
Yeah.
35-28. You got the Bulls at 30-32 in number nine. And then the Hawks at 28-34 at number 10. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of teams that are still within shouting distance of making that top 10 to get into that play-in game. You got the Nets, mm-hmm. 25-37. They're three games back of the Hawks.
Yep.
And then the Raptors at 23-39. They're five games back of the Hawks. So mm-hmm. still in it, but their time's getting a little shorter and shorter as we go.
Right, yeah.
And so, I mean, I think the top eight or so are pretty well solidified, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And then that nine through 12, yeah. any of those teams have a chance to get in.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like you touched on there, you know, for people that don't know or haven't followed professional basketball as closely as maybe we have, they, you know, have expanded the playoffs now where they have kind of this little small play-in tournament before all eight seeds are determined. So, you know, the seeds 7 through 10 all kind of face off against each other to determine who's the final two spots that make it into right. the actual, you know, NBA playoffs. So, you know, like Matt mentioned, that 10 seed is the cutoff for actually making it, giving yourself a chance to make it to the playoffs or whatever. So you want to be 10 or higher to, you know, give yourself a chance to, you know, be in the playoffs. You know, what blows my mind is that, you know, you got the Pistons and the Wizards, who are the bottom feeders in mm-hmm. the East, have won a combined 18 games, 9 games each. Still have not technically been eliminated from playoff contention, to, you know, if you can believe it.
Yeah, 19 games back with 20. Right. They'd have to win them all, and right. the other guys have to lose them all.
I know it's crazy. Crazier things have happened, but technically, yeah, they are not eliminated. You know, the Pistons sitting at 9-52 and the Wizards sitting at 9-53. Technically not eliminated just yet, but their time is coming. But, you know, if the playoffs were to start today, you know, if this is, you know, the if the standings were to stay pat like we have them right now, the play-in tournament would look like this. We'd have the currently seventh seeded Philadelphia 76ers taking on the eighth seeded Indiana Pacers. The Pacers 2-1 in the regular season against the Philadelphia 76ers. Then you have the ninth-seeded Chicago Bulls would be taking on the tenth-seeded Atlanta Hawks in the first round of that play-in tournament, and the Bulls were 2-0 so far against the Hawks in the regular season. Then, if we're looking at the actual playoff matchups, the one seed and the two seed, Boston and Milwaukee, are to be determined who they would play in the first round, because it's made up of whoever wins those play-in tournament games. So the only two matchups that at the moment are defined would be right now the number three seeded Cleveland Cavaliers would be taking on the number six Miami Heat. In the regular season so far, they've tied 1-1. Mm-hmm. Then you got the fourth seeded Orlando Magic taking on the fifth seeded New York Knicks. The Magic 3-0 in the regular season against the Knicks. Wow. So, you know, good for the Magic to be up there. You know,
curious if the Knicks were healthy in any of those games that they played. Randall's been out quite a bit.
The Knicks are. If there's a team that's been beloggered by injuries, it's been the Knicks. It seems like as soon as they get one guy back, the next guy goes down. Yeah. And it just they can't get fully healthy. I mean, this is a dangerous, probably much like the 76ers. If the Knicks by some chance can get all healthy at the right time, it'll be a dangerous team, a dangerous, possibly lower seeded team that could make a run in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Same with the 76ers. If they can get Embiid back in a timely manner, I don't think you get Embiid back in the first round.
And
you know, go on a run or, you know, whatever. I think you probably want to try to get him back with a handful of games to try to get him back into somewhat basketball shape. But between the Knicks and the 76ers could be two dangerous low seeds if they can get healthy. That could upset some higher seeds and make a run in the playoffs from the Eastern Conference.
Can you imagine the Celtics or the Bucks having to take on a healthy 76ers team that played their way into this thing.
Right, absolutely.
So you could be going home in
the first
round.
That's your prize, you know, for playing so well, especially for the Celtics, who, you know, are dominating basketball altogether. Yeah. You get your first-round matchup with
– I'd almost be happier to drop to the three seed right now and let somebody else have their chance.
The problem is the Celtics, I mean, I think they're too good at winning.
Right.
I think it'd be harder for them to lose, I think. Try to lose at this point. Because of how far they are ahead in the standings,
so they'll probably almost have to lose them all to drop three.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That's a bad way to limp into the playoffs.
Right? I don't know that I necessarily want to take that bad, mojo going into the playoffs. But so a lot of exciting stuff. You know, a lot of things. Again, like 20, 25 games still left to go in the NBA regular season. A lot of kind of after 1 and 2, not even 1 and 2, because the Cavs still have an opportunity to move up to the two seed as well. So kind of after the Celtics, it all gets muddied after that. I mean, anybody could, you know, jump all the way up to two at any given night, for anybody goes on a run and another team that, you know, kind of stumbles, it could really shift, you know, the seedings in the East. So then moving over to the West.
Yeah, I think you probably got a little more information than I do. So I'll go ahead and give the rundown, and then you can give a little more filler here.
Go ahead.
So we'll start with the number one seed in the West. You got the Minnesota Timberwolves, surprisingly, you know, 43-19. I think they were what, 8 or 9 seed last year in the play-in to get into this tournament.
Yep.
Then you got the Oklahoma City Thunder, who was also, I think, a 7 or
I don't even think they made the playoffs.
Did they not make it last year?
I think they're a play-in team, maybe like a 10 or something.
Okay, they
might
have been a 10. Yeah. I knew they were down there.
Yeah.
But they're also tied for that number one overall in the West at 43-19.
Yeah.
Then followed by last year's NBA champions, Denver Nuggets, at 42-20.
Only a game behind, so
real tough.
And then the Clippers, only 2.5 games back at 40-21. So 1 through 4, it's anybody's ball game. Mm-hmm. Then you get a little more separation here once you get to the middle of the pack. You got the Pelicans at 37-25. They're 6 games back. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Suns at 36-26, 7 games back. Kings at 35-26, 7.5. So any of that could get jumbled up and moved around.
Yeah.
And then 8 is the Dallas Mavericks at 34-28. Mm-hmm. They're 9 games back. The Golden State Warriors at 33-28, 9.5 back.
Yep.
And then the last spot to have a shot to be in right now. And really, it looks like the last team that probably will be.
Will have a chance.
It jumps off after that, too. Right. The Lakers at 34-30.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Jazz at 28-35, not eliminated, but five and a half games back of the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Rockets at 27-35. They're 6 games back.
Right.
And then Grizzlies, Trailblazers, and the Spurs. San Antonio Spurs are all way off the pace.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think – you know, we look at the East and we got, you know, kind of a one dominant team, you know, with the Celtics and then kind of everybody else. I mean, in this Western Conference, you got everybody else. I mean, you don't have, the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Denver Nuggets all kind of, you know, fighting for one. But 1 through 8, I mean, any of those, again, there's not much separation between 1 through 8. I mean, there's 9 games that are separate.
A crazy couple of weeks of basketball.
Right. In the Western Conference, I'm speaking from experience with the Dallas Mavericks, you know, only a handful of weeks ago, this team was sitting at, you know, the 4 or 5 seed. Mm-hmm. They lost, I don't even know, maybe it was like only like 2 games. They lost 2 games in a row, and they went from 4 down to 8. Oh. You know, it's that tight right now in the Western Conference. So it you know, definitely this Western Conference race will be exciting to see what happens over the last kind of quarter of the season. To me, it's a problem. You got Minnesota and Oklahoma City. I mean, it's the two teams that I've talked about a little bit already throughout, you know, the season as kind of my most surprising teams.
Right.
Honestly, I think it continues to be a surprise for me because I honestly thought these teams were going to – at some point the wheels were going to fall off. But – they haven't, and here they are. I mean,
I would have expected it more from the Thunder than Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota's got some
established. They do have some veterans. They do have some veterans. The Thunder, on the other hand, you know, don't have as many vets. It's made up of a very young draft pick type team. I would have to agree with you, Matt. I think that if there was between those two teams, if I was betting, I would have said the Thunder would be the team that fell off. But here they are. You know, they're still playing good basketball, still, you know, competing in a Western Conference that's super tough.
The Nuggets, they all need to watch out because they're getting hot at the right time. They're playing some of their best basketball of the season.
Absolutely. Similar to the Eastern Conference, then, you know, we'll you know, here are the current matchups that we would have if the season, you know, playoffs were to start today. We would have the 7th-seeded Sacramento Kings taking on the 8th-seeded Dallas Mavericks. The Kings so far 2-0 in the regular season against the Mavericks. And then, you know, kind of an exciting, you know, play-in tournament game between, you know, two veteran teams or, you know, two teams that we're used to seeing play each other, playoffs, NBA regular season, you know,
conference championships,
NBA championships. We got the Golden State Warriors as the current 9th seed taking on the 10th-seeded Los Angeles Lakers. And that's a win or go home game if that's how it stands. You know, if that were to play out how it is today, that would be a game of win or go, you know, go home.
Yeah.
You know, one game and you're out. If you don't win, you're out. Yeah. So those two teams, and, you know, ironically have so far tied 1-1 in the regular season. So, you know, I think it's going to be exciting if that's how it, you know, how it plays out, but you know, still a lot of basketball to go. And, you know, Golden State both lost, the Lakers are, you know, only a couple of games from being the 7th seed or being the 6th seed in the West. So, you know, get hot at the right time and, you know, the teams above you, you know, kind of slump, you could, you know, make your way or play your way out of that play-in tournament and, you know, get, get yourself a first round, you know, first round matchup and not have to worry about the play in tournament. But then,
so who do you like, Kings versus Mavs and Warriors versus Lakers?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's tough to pick, you know, obviously being a Mavericks fan, right. Obviously it's tough to pick against the Mavericks, but, you know, I think in a winner go home type situation, even if the Mavericks are to lose against the Kings, I think in a winner go home type situation, with the way that Luka is playing, the way he has played this season, it's tough to pick against a guy in a win or go home type right. situation. But I think the Mavericks can beat the Kings, can pull off, you know, somewhat of an upset here, if you will, get the win, get into the playoffs, and, you know, not have to worry about, you know, going on the road or, you know, playing against, you know, another team in right. the play-in tournament. I like the Mavericks to come out on that one. And then Golden State Lakers, man, this is
neither
tough.
Of them are playing.
Yeah, neither one of them are. You know, really, it to me, it's a coin toss at right. this point, because
whoever brings it that day.
Yeah, it to me, ask me again at the end of the season,
right.
because to me, it's going to be who's playing hot at the time, because both of these teams
have gone
up, up and down. I mean, obviously the Lakers were your NBA in-season tournament champions.
Right.
And now here they are barely scraping in to get into the playoffs. So
and LeBron said at that point, we play when something's on the line.
Right. So it, you know, yeah, something's on the line here, right. you know, and then we'll see what, you know, what happens. But ask me the question again at the end of the season,
right.
towards the end of the season, how the teams are trending. That'll be my pick of who wins the game.
And I'd say I don't think I want to be the Kings playing either of those
right,
in a
right,
win or go home
right,
because
right.
that's a heart of a champion for
right.
both those teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the Kings just haven't been there.
Right,
and done
right,
that,
exactly. So. You know, going against, two veteran squads, you know, between the Warriors and the Lakers. Yeah, definitely a tough ask for a Kings team. And then, you know, playoff matchups, you know, the Timberwolves, the Thunder, to be determined who they'll play based on the current, you know, on the play-in tournament results. So the Nuggets, you know, the 3 seed currently would get then the 6-seeded Phoenix Suns, which would be, to me, be an exciting matchup to watch in the first round. These two teams so far 1-1 in the regular season. And then you get the 4-seeded Clippers taking on the 5th-seeded Pelicans. And, you know, ironically, Pelicans 2-1 against the Clippers, you know, so far this season. So I think probably the only so far matchup where the lower seed has a better, you know, record against, you know, the higher seed so far in both the Eastern and Western Conference. So, you know, going to be exciting to, you know, exciting playoff basketball. Like I said, we still got lots of season to go. Right. There's still a lot, you know, a lot to be determined here. So, you know, definitely, a good time to tune into the NBA season. Because, you know, all the stars are going to be out at this point. There is no more taking games off. This
right.
is, you know, this is it. This is the final. This is the final push towards the playoffs. You know, so going to be exciting, you know, regular season basketball still left to be played. Obviously, with the many games that we have left, a lot of these teams that are in the playoffs are going to be playing other teams that are in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot still to play for a lot of these teams. And since they've expanded the playoff, it really gets even more, you know, exciting because, yeah, you do still have a lot of games that still mean something at this point in the season. So we'll see, you know, how things shake up, you know, going into the last, you know, last quarter of the season. But, yeah, still a lot to play for, like I said. So, well, that's going to then transition us, you know, going to continue with the NBA. You know, like I mentioned several times, we're at like the 3-quarter mark here in the regular season. So we're going to do our, you know, segment that we do. We'll talk about, you know, who we think our favorite is to win the NBA title or, you know, make it to the NBA finals, who we like as our best player, MVP candidate, who at this point is maybe our most surprising team and who at this point is our most disappointing or, you know, not so hot team at this point in the season. So we'll get things kicked off here with who we like to win, to hoist that, you know, Larry O'Brien trophy at the end of the season. Matt, I'll let you start. Who do you like in the NBA Finals, or who's your NBA champion at this point?
Yeah, so I'm sticking with the same matchup I actually said last time. Mm-hmm. I'm sticking with the Boston Celtics at 48-13, taking on the LA Clippers at 40-21.
Yeah.
I have kind of said before for the Clippers, this is now or never time. They've got all these veterans.
Yep.
They're not getting any younger. They've been talking about it for years. They're finally healthy and playing together. Mm-hmm. I like the makeup of that team.
Yep.
But ultimately, I like the Celtics to win this whole thing. Yeah. They're not 48-13 for any, you know, dumb reason. They're such a well-rounded team. Mm-hmm. They've got a big that can guard on the inside. He defends the rim, blocks shots, but he can also, he makes the other big have to work on the defensive side because he can shoot to three.
Right.
Yep. And that nothing's more dangerous than a big that can shoot from the outside.
Right.
So just having that well-roundedness of that entire team, I love the Celtics' chances this year. I think they finally made the moves
to get over the hump
and win that championship.
Yep. I got to agree with you. I like the Celtics to hoist the trophy at the end of the season. You know, this is a team that's playing well, you know, both ends of the floor, a team that's 29-3 at home, 33-7 against the other Eastern Conference teams, you know, top five, top 10 in all defensive, offensive categories. I mean, they just got a very well-rounded team that looks like they're ready to, you know, finally get over the hump and finally win this thing. Cause I don't know. I feel like I've cursed the Celtics because every time I'd probably go back in my notes almost every single time we've talked about this segment for the past probably 2 or 3 years.
We're talking about
the Celtics. I say the Celtics, this is it. They're winning the NBA title and then they don't. So this is it, Celtics. Don't make me look like an idiot. Put it together. Right. Get it done. Get a trophy. You know, for a franchise that's no stranger to winning NBA titles at this point, you know, this is a team that, you know, they can get it done if they just, you know, put their mind to it. Yeah. They have the makeup to win an NBA championship. All right. Well, then, you know, best team or, you know, team to win the championship. Who do you like? Best player, MVP, to be holding, you know, the MVP trophy at the end of the season? Yeah.
So, you know, typically I always say best player on the best team, but I'm not going with somebody from the Celtics. Mm-hmm. They're all so well-rounded and play together so much. Their stats kind of even out.
Yeah.
None of them are really running away with anything. Mm-hmm. So I'm going with the MVP right now to be a player from Oklahoma City, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Okay.
31.1 points per game, 5.6 rebounds per game, 6.5 assists per game, 2.1 steals per game, and 1 block per game. Mm-hmm. And the guy is getting it done at every level. Mm-hmm. And he led the surprising resurgence of this Oklahoma City team. It's built on him.
The solid veteran that they do have on that team.
He's the star there, and I think he would earn the MVP this year.
Well, I got to, you know, I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I the MVP to me at the moment, you know, it's a guy that have, you know, said all season, and a guy that, you know, has looked like an MVP candidate the past couple of seasons, but, you know, has kind of petered out, you know, in later stages of the season. But I think at this point is putting together a season that is an MVP type season. And that's the point guard, Luka Doncic from the Dallas Mavericks. The only knock that you do have on him is
that low seed.
Yeah. Their record's not as good as what you would want for, you know, an MVP candidate. But as far as pure stats go, this is a guy that, you can't say anything against him as far as, you know, stats go. I mean, he's leading the league in points per game at almost 35 a game, while also leading the NBA in minutes played per game. His 3-point percentage is, it to me, which is the biggest improvement from season to season for Luka, has been his 3-point shooting is significantly better than what it has been, you know, in years past. A guy that's nearly averaging a triple double, 9 rebounds, which is the most amongst NBA guards. He's almost top 20 amongst all NBA players as far as rebounds go. And just shy of 10 assists per game. So like I said, almost averaging a triple-double. He's got 14 triple-doubles on the season. A guy that, if the Mavericks can make, you know, an ever-so push here at the end to, you know, improve their overall record, improve their seeding in the West, I think will go a long way to convincing voters that, and Luka's obviously going to be a big part of that, has been so far this season, I think will be enough to, you know, possibly maybe sway some voters that are on the fence or, you know, having a tough time.
And I will say by Vegas, neither of these two are actually the current betting favorite. It's the guy who won it last year and the big there out of in Denver.
Okay. Nikola Jokic. Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Exactly the betting favorite right now.
Yeah. And so. A guy that has won the MVP, you know, a couple of seasons now. So
it'd actually be money to be won if you put it on either of these two guys.
Absolutely. And I think it, because, yeah, I was kind of reading, you know, I think, you know, Giannis is in there, Jokic is in there, Luka. I think there are, even this late in the season, it's still maybe a mixed bag, I think, or, you know, a real close race. I don't think that there's one guy that has, like, clearly run away with it at this point. And so it's going to be exciting stuff to see who's the dominant player over the last quarter of the season to really push their team forward and, you know, push themselves into the, you know, the MVP, solidify themselves as the MVP. All right. Well, then we're gonna talk. You know, most surprising team or hottest team at this point. You know, a team that again nobody maybe expected to be here at this point, or you know, whatever you know you use to you know rate your team. I'll get it started here. You know, my most surprising team at this point in the season is the Orlando Magic. You know, sitting at 37-26. First in their division, fourth best team in the East. You know, a team that great defensively. The only, you know, if you're looking at, you know, something to knock them on or, you know, something that they probably, again, this late in the season, it's probably not going to happen, but something that they need to improve if they want to really make a deep playoff run is the offense is not great. They don't score the ball very well, but they don't. They also, at the same time, don't allow you to score a lot of points either. They're the third best team in the NBA as far as points per game allowed. Another knock, and it's a young team, still a young team that's made up of a lot of draft picks that they've drafted over the last, you know, handful of years that have exceeded expectations or, you know, a little bit accelerated on the curve as far as, you know, what they thought development-wise they would be. But again, probably something that you're going to see in a young team. They're 16-18 on the road. They're 21-8 at home, but they're 16-18 on the road. And probably, you know, that is going to be tough. Obviously, if they can stay one of those top four teams, they're going to at least get a first round playoff series at home. They're going to get, you know, that home court advantage, if you will, in the first round of the playoffs. But, you know, still a lot of ball game to go. But, you know, a team that does a lot of, you know, things that maybe don't show up on the stat line as much, or people don't look into the stats as much. I think this Magic team is playing well. You know, for me, a surprise with how young they are that they're, you know, competing with the better teams in the Eastern Conference. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah. So I went about this a little different. I just went hot and not.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So to me, there's still no hotter team in the NBA than the team we just talked about in the Boston Celtics. Okay. Currently the best record at 48-13.
Yep.
They've won 9 of their last 10, winning those games by an average of 19 points per game.
Right. Yeah.
And in those games, they also had a 28-point win over Dallas.
Yep.
And a 52-point win over Golden State, and also an 18-point win over Philadelphia.
Right.
I mean, these aren't slouches they're beating, and they're beating them big.
Right.
Like, these guys are just playing off the charts basketball
now. When they want to play, they'll beat anybody in the world, definitely. Definitely not a better team. Yeah, I got to agree with you. If, you know, from a hot team perspective, definitely the Boston Celtics are one of the hottest teams right now in the NBA. Well, for every hot team and not so great and not so surprising or whatever, however you want to put it, you know, we got teams that are playing bad. And for me, it was tough to pick one most disappointing team. So what did I do? I picked two of them. So, and that's the two teams that we talked about somewhat in our last segment with the NBA. It's the two teams that played in the play-in championship game, the Pacers and the Lakers.
Yeah.
Both of those teams, you know, probably pretty, you know, we're somewhat hotter, you know, somewhat going into that play-in tournament. We're two of the hotter teams make it to the play-in championship game. You know, ultimately was an exciting back and forth matchup between the two teams in that play-in championship game. The Lakers came out on top. Well, between the two teams, they do have winning records combined. You know, they're 69-58, but what has that gotten them? The Pacers are eighth in the East. And the Lakers are 10th in the West.
Right.
Since that play-in championship game, the Pacers have gone 23-20.
At least the winning record.
It's decent. The Lakers, on the other hand, have gone 20-21 since the play-in championship game. The Lakers, 12-19 on the road this year, 23-21 against other Western Conference teams. Then the Pacers, you look at theirs, you know, most of the they're kind of just an average team, in my opinion, because they're 20-12 at home, which is not a phenomenal record at home, but they're even worse on the road. They're 15-16 on the road. So to me, yeah, two of those teams, you know, that, yeah, look like the two dominant teams at that part of the season, again, very early on, have really tailspinned out of control since then, you know, on the verge. I think, again, both teams will make the playoffs. I'm not saying that that's, you know, not going to happen, but definitely have taken a downward spiral from what they were only a few short months ago. So to me, that those are my two disappointing teams at this point in the season.
Well, for me, all season, this has been pretty easy. It's been the Detroit Pistons all season. But, you know, finally somebody found a way to be worse. I mean, after the Pistons lost, what, 20-some in a row?
Lost the whole month of whatever. Yeah. They didn't win a single game.
Somehow now the Wizards have gotten worse.
Right.
They're 0-10 their last 10 games. That ties them for the worst record, 9-53.
Right.
And they've got a 31-point loss on their record to the Thunder. And a 20-point loss to the Nuggets during that stretch.
Right.
I mean, these guys aren't just losing. They're losing big.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this was a team that was expected to be okay. They had some young talent returning. And, you know, they did okay last year. Nobody expected them to be here under the Pistons fighting for dead last in the NBA at this point.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's kind of ironic you say that because, you know, one of the Wizards players, Kyle Kuzma, who's, you know, on the team, I can remember, I don't know, it was during the Pistons kind of losing streak or when they were, you know, yeah, looked like the team to beat as far as the team to beat to be the worst team in the NBA.
Right.
You know, Kyle Kuzma tweeted out, you know, don't be that team. Well, you are that team, my friend, now.
Sure.
You know, so it's just, you know, karma always plays, it, you know, makes its way and, you know, plays mind games on people. So it, awfully interesting that that's how it's played out, that, you know, you tweet something like that. Well, now you are that team. So
yes,
congratulations to the Wizards. You are officially at this point the worst team in the NBA. So we'll see, who's battling out for the worst team in the NBA between the Pistons and the Wizards. They probably play each other at some point to end the season. So we'll be playing for you know, the potential number one pick for next year.
Well,
so.
Not really. It's still the lottery.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Potentially, you know, number one pick. Cause even if you have the worst record, you're not guaranteed the number one pick. So
those ping pong balls.
Right. Out. Right. Exactly. So, all right. Well, that wraps it up for our NBA segment. We're going to take a real quick commercial break. Stick with us. We're going to talk a little bit of college basketball once we get back.
This podcast is sponsored by Podbean. Podbean is the easiest way to create your own podcast. We use Podbean to host Fired Up. Download the free Podbean podcast app to start, record, and publish your very own podcast in minutes. Podbean provides everything you need to run your podcast, and you can record and publish episodes directly from the app on your phone. Download the free Podbean app today. That's Podbean. Head on over to Podbean at www.podbean.com and use the code PODCAST21 for your first 30 days of podcast hosting for free. Check it out.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. Like I mentioned before the break, going to continue with basketball, but going to move to the college ranks to talk about the last week of the regular season, kind of the last weekend, you know, in college basketball before we're starting conference tournaments and starting Selection Sunday and, you know, starting March Madness, which is always a great time. But, you know, this late in the season, there's still a lot on the line, even going into the last Saturday here in college basketball, or, you know, last Saturday in the regular season.
Teams waiting to get on the bubble, on the bubble.
Absolutely. So, you know, we picked five games again this week to, you know, try to give our thoughts and, you know, give our predictions on who we think's gonna come out on top. So we'll get things started here. A little bit of a American Athletic Conference battle here between the Memphis Tigers and the Florida Atlantic Owls. You know, a surprise team from last year that, you know, made their way all the way to the Final Four last year. And actually, I think made it to the championship, I believe, last year. So, you know, exciting stuff for them. You know, somewhat on the bubble. I think they've got a pretty solid case to get in, but, you know, always helps to get another win to add to it. And, you know, Memphis is no slouch. They, you know, 22-8 on the season, while Florida Atlantic 23-7. These two teams faced off against each other about, you know, a week or two ago. Memphis came out in a close battle, 78-74. Matt, what's your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, like you said, Memphis did just win their recent battle, 78-74. Looking at these two teams on paper, they're really close. They they play similar basketball.
Yeah.
FAU on the season's averaging about two more points per game. Right. And in a close contest like this, the most important thing I see is FAU's turning it over two less times per game. Mm-hmm. So that's two more possessions they've got a chance to stick some points on the board and keep this thing close or win. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the difference. It's the ball control, keeping the turnovers down, and that's going to make the difference. FAU gets a win and a close one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like the Owls from Florida to get it done here. But, yeah, the two highest scoring teams in the AAC. So, you know, going to be some points are going to be put up in this one because even though they're great at scoring points, they don't do very well at limiting points as well. So I expect this to be an up and down contest, lots of points scored. But yeah, that turnover margin for me, I think is going to be the difference. Also Florida Atlantic 12-1 at home this year. So far through the season. Memphis not so bad on the road. They're 7-5 on the road, but I think Florida Atlantic just a couple extra possessions from forcing a couple of turnovers. Another I think close high scoring close battle, but I think Florida Atlantic gets their revenge at home, beats the Tigers and solidifies themselves as a team in March Madness. Then moving to a top 15 battle in the Big 12, we got the 14th seeded Kansas Jayhawks. Going up against the currently number one ranked Houston Cougars. Houston comes in at 27-3. Kansas comes in at 22-8. These two teams, again, faced off against each other about a month ago. Mm-hmm. Kansas getting the win in this one, pretty dominant fashion, 78-65 in that game. Obviously going on the road this time to Houston to, you know, try to be a clean sweep in the regular season of the Houston Cougars. Matt, what's your chances? You like Kansas, or who do you like in this matchup?
You know, actually, I do. I like Kansas to get the upset here. You know, they're shooting. They're averaging three more points per game, which doesn't seem like much. And in a close game, it really isn't much. But, you know, they're shooting the ball 6% better from the field and 5% better ultimately from the free throw line, which I think is going to be the ultimate difference in this game coming down the stretch if teams got a foul. The biggest thing with Houston is they don't foul a lot.
Right.
So if they need to foul down the stretch, they're not always in the bonus. It costs time, that always hurts in a close game. So, you know, I like Kansas to win a close one here.
All right. Well, I disagree with you. I like the Houston Cougars to get it done. A couple of reasons why. Kansas 3-6 on the road this year. Houston, a clean 16-0 at home so far this season.
All good things got to come to an
end. Yeah. You know, no better way than Kansas to go in there and knock them off. But no, I just think it will be a tighter ball game than what we saw in the first matchup.
Agreed.
I think for Kansas to get Kevin McCullough back, you know, he played in their last game and, you know, made a pretty significant impact. It was a loss for Kansas, but again, to see him back, a guy that averages almost 20 points a game, a little over 6 rebounds a game and 4 assists per game, a guy that is capable of doing a lot of things for this Kansas team. I think that's good for this Kansas team, not maybe just in this game, but going forward, Memphis, you know, in the tournaments and in, you know, March Madness. I think it's good for them to get him back, you know, before the regular season kind of wraps up, to get him back into, you know, basketball shape. Like I said, I think it will be a close battle, much closer than it was in the first one. I like Houston to squeak out one at home, you know, but I think it's going to be a back and forth battle all game, just because of the style of play that Houston doesn't blow teams out because they don't score the basketball very much, but their defense is solid. So it you're always going to be in for an exciting game just because of the style of play that Houston plays. So I think it's going to be a close battle, but I like Houston to come out on top in this one. Then moving to the south, we got the old Kentucky Wildcats going on the road to the number four ranked Tennessee Volunteers. Tennessee 24-6, Kentucky 22-8. You like points in this one? These two teams faced off about a month ago. Tennessee won the game by a score of 103-92. We're talking almost NBA game there. And probably right now, probably the two hottest teams in the SEC right now. Kentucky 4-1 in their last five games. Tennessee 5-0 in their last five games. Matt, what's some keys in this one? Who do you like to win the game?
Yeah. You know, Kentucky, they can really score the ball. They're averaging 9 more points per game, and they're shooting better from every spot on the court than Tennessee. I think in a revenge game, if you're hot, you're shooting good. I like Kentucky's chances to get that revenge and take a win on the road at Tennessee.
Yeah, this one was definitely tough for me to pick. You know, like you mentioned, Kentucky, no slouches on the road. They're 6-3 on the road this year. Tennessee is 14-1 at home. You know, I like Tennessee ever so slightly in this game. I think it's going to be another high-scoring affair. Probably a tighter ball game than what we saw in matchup number
it's
one.
It's going to be another 11-point game.
But, you know, the key to me is going to be, you know, one of the things that Tennessee doesn't do very well is that they do allow a lot of second-chance opportunities, which would spell well for a Kentucky team if that's what they did very well. But, unfortunately, they don't do that very well. They're not a great second-chance or offensive rebounding team. I think that's a way to beat this Tennessee team. Unfortunately, that's just not the makeup that you know, Kentucky has. Another key for Kentucky to pull off the upset is continue to shoot the ball from three-point line very well. They shoot it almost a 41% mark as a team. So
they don't have to offensive rebound. They
just
got to make
it. Yeah, you just got to make it. Make it one time. You don't got to worry about it at this point. But going on the road, it's always tougher to shoot at somebody else's gym on the road. But to pull off upsets, you got to make some outside shots. Kentucky has the makeup to do it, but going to be tough going into Tennessee's house and beat them on the road in a hostile environment, you know, a pumped up team in Tennessee that still has a lot to play for. They've somewhat wrapped up the SEC, but still a chance to play for a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. So they still got a lot to play for. This game still means a lot. Two rivals between Kentucky and Tennessee when it comes to basketball. But I like the Tennessee Volunteers to knock off Kentucky and you know, sweep the regular season. Then moving back to the Big 12, we got, you know, a matchup between, you know, the 11th ranked Baylor Bears, who, you know, got a big win against the Kansas Jayhawks last week, taking on the Texas Tech Red Raiders. These two teams, again, about a month ago, faced off. Baylor, you know, squeaked one out by a score of 79-73. Both of these teams pretty close as far as the standings go, as far as stats go, you know, pretty similar. Matt, who do you like in this game?
Yeah, you got Baylor. They're scoring about 6 more points per game, and they're better in almost most of the other statistical categories.
Yeah.
But I also want to look at a recent opponent they've both faced here in Texas. Baylor looked like the better team in that game. Yeah. Baylor beat them 93-85. What Tech lost that game 69-81.
Yeah.
I just think Baylor's playing hotter basketball right now, and I like their chances to get the W here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a good game, a kind of a grinded out game, I think, in my opinion. Like I said, it's a very tough one to pick just because of the stats that are very, very close. But to me, the difference in this game, if it's going to be close, is the free throws. Baylor as a team is averaging almost 24 free throw attempts per game, which is first in the Big 12. And if I had to look at the stats, I'd say it's probably pretty close amongst all NCAA teams.
Right.
And they're no slouches as far as shooting the ball, you know, from the free throw line. They're pretty decent when they do get to the line. So I think in a close game like this on the road, getting those extra freebies at the line going to be the difference for Baylor in this game. I think they go on the road, get a big win, you know, at Texas Tech to set themselves up, you know, for the Big 12 tournament. All right. Well, then the last game, you know, a game that's near and dear to my heart, you know, the old Tobacco Road rivalry between North Carolina Tar Heels taking on the Duke Blue Devils. Again, about a month ago, these two teams faced off, and North Carolina got the best of Duke 94-83 in that game. Obviously, coming into Duke this time, you know, on the road, even if you can even call it a road game, you know, just a half a click down the road, I guess, at this point. But, you know, North Carolina 7-2 on the road this year, Duke 15-2 at home. You know, these two teams obviously are the clearly best two teams in the ACC this year. Two of the juggernauts, as we are used to seeing, you know, in college basketball. Matt, who do you like in the Blue Bloods, you know, rivalry here?
Well, I mean, there's nothing better than watching these two go at it as top 10 teams. Right. I mean, it's just one of the most exciting rivalries in sports to go up there with Ohio State, Michigan, and football.
Yeah.
You know, you got the Yankees and
Red Sox, and baseball. You know? Yeah, so, absolutely.
I mean, it's iconic. Mm-hmm. But watching both of these teams this year, Duke's got to be the most quiet top 10 team I think I've ever seen.
Like, right. A Duke team.
Yeah, they don't feel like a top 10 team.
Right. Yeah.
They've got Filipowski and not much else.
Right, absolutely. I mean,
they find ways to win. They do find ways to win.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just – watching North Carolina play, I'm going with them.
Yeah.
They've got studs all over the floor, most notably their 21-point-per-game scorer and R.J. Davis and their big man, Armando Bacot, who's averaging 14-10. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they just – too much talent.
They got well-rounded team.
It seems like it's going to be tough to beat. Yeah. I'm going with North Carolina to win a close one.
Yeah, yeah. This one pulled at my heartstrings for sure. I went back and forth. I went back and forth a lot. You know, ultimately, I couldn't pick against my Duke team, obviously, but it is going to be an exciting game. You know, and what does worry me is that, you know, in that first game, you know, North Carolina scored 94 points, and R.J. Davis didn't even play that great, didn't even have his best game, you know, at all, and they still put up 94. Obviously, playing at home, that, you know, that plays into it, and, you know, you get the crowd behind it, everything else. You go on the road to a gym where it's, again, going to be a ruckus environment. You know, it's going to be exciting. You know, nowhere better to play than, you know, at Duke for Duke, I guess. To me, I think the difference in this one is going to be the 3-point shooting. These two teams shoot the 3-ball pretty well. But in the games that I have watched, you know, for Duke, and I've watched, you know, pretty much every game this season for them, they struggle a lot from the 3-point line on the road. Mm-hmm. But when they're at home, they are red hot from the 3-point line. I think that's going to be the difference in this one. I think, again, going to be a game of runs, a game where you're going to see North Carolina get ahead, you know, by a handful of points. Duke comes storming back, you know, whatever. I think a couple of big threes late in the game from Duke at home going to be the difference in this game. But, yeah, one that's going to be exciting and always lives up to the hype at this point. I expect big things from both of these teams and still a lot to play for, not just in the ACC, but NCAA tournament implications in this game as well. So I like the Blue Devils to get it done, but it's going to be an exciting one. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's all we got for our show. Before I close it out, I want to mention, you know, as I have mentioned the last couple of shows, we will be having our, you know, March Madness Bracket Challenge. You know, we do give out prizes to first, second, and third in our Bracket Challenge. Completely free to enter. So open to anybody and everybody. You know, we hope you get in on the fun. You know, it's all, like I said, always an exciting time for us here in the studio. And, you know, I know everybody in America loves to get in on the action and, you know, get an opportunity to get that elusive perfect bracket, which, you know, has never happened, but, you know, maybe this is the year. Maybe it happens at some point, but who knows? But again, don't know anything about basketball. All right. Get in on the action because it's always fun, even if you don't know anything about sports or about basketball in general. So, you know, look for it on our different social medias. We'll be posting stuff about where to sign up and how to get in the group and, you know, get the possibility to win some prizes. So, you know, appreciate y'all listening to Fired Up with your hosts, Colton Cow,
Matt Cordes.
We hope you enjoyed our episode this week. And, you know, if you want to hear other topics or future episodes, or, you know, you just got a burning sports question you want to hear us talk about on the show, feel free to reach out to us on our different social medias. We do have an Instagram if you search for @FiredUp_podcast, or you can find us over on Facebook if you search for Fired Up, Sports Podcast. And as always, you can head over to our website at www.firedup1.podbean.com, where you can find all of our past episodes and, you know, just a little bit of information about the show. And as always, you can find this episode and all of our past episodes on pretty much any podcast platform you can think of. So Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. So all the big names, you can find our show and you can listen to it and, you know, catch up on everything that you've missed. So as always, stay fired up.